to take an intro.
Well, why don't you get your favorite hanging on there? How about this one? You like this one?
Oh, yeah, that one's pretty.
That's pretty right there. Now, come here, let me show you something. I like the Blue Balls.
Nueve. Blue Balls NYCFC. Season 9.
I like the Blue Balls. The Blue Balls.
Nueve.
Blue Balls.
Season 9. Nueve.
Like French lesbians playing beach volleyball in the snow, ladies and gentlemen, you've got blue balls. My name is Jake Beckard, and I'm your intrepid co-host, and I am joined this week, as all every week, by my intrepid co-host, Mr. Trey Fillmore. Trey, how are you this week? Do you get it? Because blue is the warmest color. You have to stay warm in the snow.
Yeah, yeah.
When you're talking about French lesbians.
That's what I think about when I think about that movie.
Beach volleyball?
Yeah, 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 and the snow and whatever.
Yeah, DOA Extreme Beach Volleyball. Am I right? Why couldn't they
remake that movie? Part?
That's right. I would remake that movie with the cast of DOA XBV for the PS2.
Man, Yeah, of course. Like, young me wanted that game, and I was like, my mother would... I would not survive if I bought that game when I was a child.
Lose her mind. How did anybody buy that game? People who haven't, you know, 40-year-olds, I think their mothers would panic, go into a tailspin. If they even so much as smelled, like, it felt truly like the forbidden fruit.
From what I've seen, that game's just a little dialogue heavy, you know. Give me more volleyball.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. The mechanics, not what you might be hoping for. I just remember watching X-Play reviews of it and being all horned up from that alone. Adam Sussman, or whatever his name is, his little buzzy voice and his spiky blonde hair. Such aughts. Truly one of the most aughts-coded pieces of media in history is the video reviews on G4 Tech TV.
Yeah, that channel was like right next to Fox Soccer Channel and Gold TV for me, and you know I'd have like Max Bratos doing shit, recapping games, and then I'd flip to like J League highlights, and then I'd flip to, here's why you should play Splinter Cell 3. It's all like in the same sandwich of each other.
That was nice. That was nice when your like TV viewing had to do a lot with just like what was adjacent, and then the pleasure of like, oh, it actually works out really beautifully. The TCM and AMC are right next to each other, mm-hmm. or the Gold TV and G4 are right next to mm-hmm. each other. It was a simpler time, Trey. Fewer choices to make. That's the miracle of always on television that we've really lost now that there are, you know, Family Guy only channels or whatever. Well, that was a nice trip down memory lane. I had to burp. I had to burp out a little claw, a little Montauk.
Are the Montauk seltzers good? I like the beers.
No, I mean they're fine. Yeah. None of them at this point, if we're honest, none of them are good.
Seltzers?
It's all, yeah. It's all a delivery mechanism. We don't drink these because they're delicious cocktails.
No, because
we don't drink them.
You drink them because they keep you slim. When you have 15 of them, you could do it
exactly.
With no guilt.
But they're not even, you know, I would rather be drinking a nice Bud Light. Budbraham Light. It would be more pleasurable than this goofy-ass seltzer. There's no pleasure to be taken in it, right? It's a little, it's like vaping, you know? It's sure, it's something.
So amazing.
But it ain't no fucking cigarette.
That's true. That is true. Don't smoke, kids. It's awful.
Don't smoke anything. Don't drink anything. And certainly don't snort anything.
Give your life to Christ.
Mm-hmm. And to Blue Balls.
And to
NYCFC. Give unto us what the Lord has rendered unto you, and we shall reward you not at all. Not unlike New York City Football Club in their worst season ever. Who's to say? We are. We're here. We're here to talk about it right now. An ignominious end to the season. Trey, wouldn't you say something? I mean, not if not unsurprising.
Appropriate, yeah, that's a good word.
Yeah, exactly. The text that you were sending my way during this match were fundamentally just like, there we are. That's us. That's right. Let's not forget. All of the other ones, they were false flags. NYCFC is still the mediocre NYCFC side that we have been watching all season. A 2-0 loss to DC United that could not get DC into the playoffs, and has all but guaranteed that we will not be joining anybody else there either. Trey, what was the culprit? Was it as you were feeling? Was it that emotional response? This is just the way that the team is. This is the true level of talent that we are able to demonstrate, or cohesion, maybe, if not talent. Or was there a particular way in which you felt like you saw New York City falter when playing this match?
It
didn't have to do exclusively with a self-inflicted wound.
No, I think it is all of part A, and I think it is more specifically like that visceral response to the draw against Miami. I mean, we said it after it was it was so punishing, not the two drop points, because we could still make the playoffs at the time, but the emotional toll that takes on a young team. And a young team is really the biggest nut in this whole fucking oak tree, is that there's no emotional responsibility.
I try not
poise.
To nut in the oak tree.
Speak for yourself.
Kids go climbing in there.
And it was just so damning of kind of the whole experience of the season itself when it comes to, like, why are we playing all these games? Why do we go through the heartbreak and the tough parts of the season and the good parts of the season if this is what the team brings to the table when it matters most? You know, we saw last year the ability of the team to, you know, stick to a solid starting 11 at the end of the year and system and push itself into the playoffs. And we were seeing symptoms of that or similarities in the previous few weeks. This is a team that has not lost a game in six games. So obviously the momentum was there. But then when this was a perfect ethos of the team losing or dropping 2 points to Miami, really feeling like a loss, and then all the good performances of the previous weeks, all the good performances within this game, just not having the emotional capability to have a performance on the road when you know you need one. I mean, the biggest damning thing is, you're going against DC United, a team that is essentially given up for the year, a team that did not have Christian Benteke, the best player, one of the best players in the league, a team that was playing 15-year-olds. I mean, children were on the field, a team whose manager did not show up to practice during the week, who literally, I might as well have been sleeping during the game. I don't think I saw Wayne Rooney do anything, who was halfway out the door. After the game, he said he had nothing lined up. The next day, he took a flight to Birmingham and is now Birmingham City's new coach. So I think it's and this was a game that the team needed to win. They needed to, because losing meant the situation we're in now, a 6% chance to make the playoffs, which might as well be zero, because we saw what this team could do on the road against a bad team, missing their best players without really a coach, losing by multiple goals, when they had a chance greater than 6%. So what are they going to do now in the last game of the season? I have no idea, but I know it's not going to be some emotional coalescence around the talent that they have or some kind of ability to string multiple chances together for large periods of the game, because that's not what they did in this past game, and it's disappointing.
Let's pause there, right? We do a lot of armchair coaching, and I love to hear it. I want to hear what is your armchair approach to, like, how do you talk a team like that is so far from being able to coalesce in that way into giving their all to this final match? Or do you? What are the conversations? What do you say to the team in public, and what do you say to key players in private?
I think it's a chain reaction of multiple things. You don't change. It was inevitable. There's nothing you could have done between Miami and now that would have changed the result of this game, in my opinion. I think it's the environment that the team's been in throughout the whole season. Like, what you changed is multiple things that should have changed way earlier on. Getting a real nine before halfway through the season. Getting solidifying your back line and not pissing off players who are in the back line before 2 months before the season's over. Understanding that you need to react to different play styles and not try to force your own play style when you have a young team that is incapable of holding its own play style through large periods of a match or through an entirety of a match. Like, I think that last point was the biggest story of this match, was that you could see NYCFC try to facilitate their own style of play and enforce it. And it, again, they were building off of good performances previously. This lineup seemed to be working well together. But you were against a DC United team that is completely different than the DC United teams we'd seen before. They had recently instituted a diamond. They were, I mean, just, it was their last game of the season. They were really throwing bodies up forward, which is something we haven't seen from them before, and just did a great job disrupting any kind of consistency throughout the game. Like, obviously, the way that DC United played allowed NYCFC in the first half to at least go near the goal, have possession in the final third, but their defense did a good job of limiting quality chances, and they allowed themselves to stretch the field and really shift the tilt of this match in a way that it was like trying to climb up a very steep hill. Like, it was just burning the fucking quads of NYCFC players to try to get any hold of this match, and that was the story of this match over and over and over again.
But do you think... Not to completely stumble on the fact that you ignored my question entirely.
Sorry.
Trey. And we can absolutely save it for the future. We can save it for, I guess, the preview against Chicago, but it just feels like... I guess that's fine. I'll save it for the preview against Chicago. What makes them so... And I'll rephrase the question to say, what is it that they're not getting that makes that feel so exhausting? That, like, makes it impossible to, instead of just, like, climbing up the hill, finding a way through it? What makes it so that it feels like 11 individual efforts and not a cohesive, right, and inventive strategy that can... This is a team designed for team play. This is not a funnel it, right, like a funnel it through to get it to the Tatati team anymore. So what is it that's not...
It just feels like all options get
closed off too quickly.
This is where I do think the youth and the IQ really play a part. I mean, we talked a lot about how this CFG style and the intent of the development of players here is to build those IQ building blocks. But, you know, I think there's a slight difference between, like, soccer IQ and situational awareness within a game, where you need to be aware of kind of what everyone is doing at all times and understanding what you need to do to help break through certain parts of the field or make certain combinations happen. For instance, like, we talk a lot about Jason and the drive that he's shown in the last 2 months to earn a starting spot on this team and has really improved his individual play. But in a game like this, like, he was being put on an island. He was unable to find any space kind of behind the left back for them or in between their shuttler that they had. So it was, like, in those moments, if you're a more veteran player, like, changing your approach and having a coach trust you to change your own approach, to involve yourself more into a game, to incorporate, to speak to Perea, to speak to Santi and work in ways that you can do it. And that's, he's just too young and too green and hasn't had a season full of minutes to be able to enforce his way into a game like that. And that goes for Santi and Bakrar, players who, when plays don't go their way, it takes them time to ramp up again their determination and not lose to keep their focus and not lose kind of that flow state that the CFG system kind of necessitates. Talish Magno, like, again, doing good things, dropping down, crossing, using his ability to progressively possess the ball to switch points of attack. Those are all good things, but, like, is he going to run like it's the end of the world if he does get dispossessed, or if the play breaks down, no fault to him, but if someone else the play breaks down because of, then is he going to sprint back to where he needs to go? Is he going to do the defensive work that needs to happen? And so on and so forth. Like, Andres Perea, like, you have to, again, just someone who clearly has a different level of engine and care when it comes to wanting to gut out a result and take chances, but his chance taking wasn't good. And okay, he's not supposed to be the primary scorer for this team, but when he does that, like, is he able, are players going to be able to cover for him when he makes those sprinting runs up the field? And the answer is like, no, because they haven't had enough time to develop around this system, this team, this starting 11. And like, worst of all, probably the worst time for Burke Risa to have like his first bad game for this team, just missing runners left and right, unable to, I mean, that second goal was almost entirely his fault. And like, they weren't even pressing that hard. It just felt like this team was unprepared for the press that we did see, or at least the high line and the tilt that was present in this game. Like, adapting to play more direct was something that this team was unwilling to do. And to recognize those moments of when DC was sending all their players forward, like, to change the game and not be scared of being yelled at by the coaches if that is going to happen, or losing your starting spot. Like, this lack of trust in players' individuality, the lack of individual soccer IQ, the lack of the coaching staff to instill that confidence in their players, the lack of calm under pressure, the lack of understanding the circumstances that you have to win this match, all of that was missing in this game. And that's, it's been missing the whole season, but it's just this game was a great kind of ability to check under the rug and see that the dust is still under there.
Yeah, it doesn't feel like it doesn't feel like there is room for like initiative taking, and I wonder if that is a kind of like an overextension of a certain kind of coaching strategy. There is something that we've never talked about really, is like the extent to which it's difficult to be Nick Cushing in this particular way. It's difficult to be the assistant coach and then given the head job for a long or short amount of time following a championship season, and then to feel as if, even when you have everybody's trust, to feel as if you can operate from, right, like you're already trained into being the assistant, right? Mm-hmm. You're already trained into, like, and that's the way that even like new players are necessarily going to experience you that way, because that's the lore around the team. And I wonder if the response to that, right, there's no good way to respond to that. But I wonder if one way that Nick Cushing has attempted to is by being very dogmatic and saying, look, we have a new play style. This is the play style. This is how we're determining things. And he's secured buy-in. I mean, this team is in support of him, largely. I don't know. The Cushing, like, saga. I mean, the Chanot saga certainly, like, put a fly in that ointment. But we've been, you know, pretty impressed with how little grumbling compared to other players, star players in other seasons, have made lives hard for their coaches when shit is not going well. That's not been happening here. So the buy-in is there. But the problem is that dogmatism is not producing results, and it's not leaving room for innovation.
Mm-hmm.
It is what it feels maybe like you're suggesting.
Yeah, I think you've hit it spot on. I think the Cushing thing is a conversation we'll have separately and is very nuanced, even though I think the direction of that conversation is just simply, you know, didn't work out. Not good. But because this is the test, I mean, it's about creating an environment where every player feels like they can perform their best and wants the team to win. And I don't know. The inconsistencies with the roster, the inconsistencies with the lineup, the inconsistencies with playing time, the inconsistencies with injury. I mean, you know, the inconsistencies with scheduling, the inconsistencies with players playing, not playing, being sold, being traded, friends being traded, captaincy being switched all the time, goalkeepers being switched, and scheduling even. Like, it's all, I mean, and results, I think, is the biggest one when it comes to a young team, is that it leads to an environment that you can't build any. You know, you want to be a dogmatic coach, but there is no, the foundation is built with sand. You got to build sandcastles. Give me that one. That was good.
That's the thing. I wanted to give it to you, but then I'm like, but does he mean you have to build sandcastles because sandcastles are better structured? Or does he mean that like anything you build will be a sandcastle?
Both.
Ah, okay. So whatever you can get out of it. Yeah. I agree. I mean, obviously, I agree. I think that that's exactly right. And so, like, you know, as much fun as it might be to, like, blame this match on, like, you know, lapse moments or, like, frustrating deflections, it's not that. It's not that. It is... I think that the place that you can zoom into are we giving our players enough agency is truly, like, finishing opportunities. And it's an interesting... There goes more seltzer. I'm so sorry, everybody. It's an interesting concept to pair with advanced analytics, because things like expected goals have so much to do with being in goal-scoring positions, with, like, off-the-ball movement resulting in, right, like, positions that most of the time are going to create goals. And what it doesn't account for, of course, is, like, that sort of finishing spirit. But when you, like, donk a little shot off of the side, off of the bar, or off of the post, because your, I don't know, confidence or focus wasn't quite what it could be, that's not going to be accounted for in that, but it is in some small way accountable by, like, not feeling like your cockiest, most confident self. Like, the person who's going to, like, find the back of the net every single time. There's this sort of, like, I'll do my best energy that takes over this team and has taken over this team many times before, that then turns into a kind of trickly little shot. It's what gets you, what was it? It's what gets you fucking, you know, 6 shots on goal and 14 shots and whatever, but, like, none of them are serious threats.
No, and if you go back through the game, they weren't. I mean, there was maybe, you know, a good hit that hit the post and, you know, some good opportunities, but it all just ends up in the keeper's lap, and then that kills the momentum.
Yep.
And then you don't have a structured ability to build back from that momentum. And it's, you know, if you have a good shot on goal, but it hits the goalkeeper, you know, a young team might respond by getting pissed at the person that shot it and being mad that they didn't get the opportunity. And that's okay. That is part of playing soccer. But at the same time, like, the bigger picture of, and this is where the sand is like understanding, like, okay, let's go. We got a shot. Let's get another one right now. Let's do it. We have to win this game. And that kind of urgency was, just completely disappeared from this match. Even the chances we got in the first half were gross. I mean, at halftime, the announcers saw the expected goal totals, and they were like, it really didn't feel like NYCFC didn't have that many good chances. But it was like a quantity over quality thing. And that's what DC United, I'm sure that's what their game plan was like, yeah, NYCFC is going to get shots. They've been getting shots the last 6 games they've played. Can we limit the quality of those shots? And that's what they did.
Can you talk a little bit about something that I think is a broader right subject of conversation right now as we start to quickly, like, rush into post-morteming this season, which is, like, how you see this performance in DC on the road as emblematic of other road performances by NYCFC. Is there some, are we more prone to this kind of play when we feel destabilized and out of our own element?
Yeah, I think it's so strange that, like, I mean, you would think this team that didn't have I think one of the biggest problems of this team this season is, like, a lack of identity, a lack of foundational understanding of what the team is. When you think of other teams throughout the league that are successful, or even teams that are having bad years, they can lean on certain players or certain play styles or certain identities that their badge holds. I think that's been missing. And you would think in that case, there would be more disparity between home and away. But this team won one road game out of 18, 17, 17. How do you even explain that? I don't even know. Like, I think that at the beginning of the season, there was a lot of road games where we lost last minute or drew last minute, or just the wind being taken out of our sails early. I mean, any of those situations kind of lead to this. I don't know. I don't know the answer. You're asking a very good question, but I have the same question. I don't know why this team had one road win this season. It's dismal. It's disgusting. I mean, it's bottom of the barrel performance, and I don't know what the question is, because the team is accommodated well. They they seem to be okay on their road woes. There's no partying that happens. There's no inconsistent scheduling. They have places to stay. They prepare well, and then they go into the away games and they just shrink. And I don't think this is all just ephemeral stuff. There's no tactical changes between home and the road that would explain it. There's no player performance that really jumps out between home and away. It's a shrinking to your opponent. It's walking into a stadium small. I don't even know.
I think that's very telling, Trey, that you said it that way.
Why?
I mean, because anybody who's not a fan of this team is screaming at their podcast right now, saying, like, it's not that hard. You have the smallest pitch in the league by a wide margin, and you are like and you are playing on that pitch, and you can take advantage of that pitch, and you found ways of taking advantage of that pitch. And when you leave that pitch, of course you feel small. The field is much bigger.
Yeah, but
right?
We had this discussion pretty early in the season where, like, New York City's home field advantage, even in the many years we were very successful, is not anymore. It's league average. And this team has been good on the road in previous years. So I'm unsure where the disconnect was this season outside of all the things we said previous.
I wonder if you can chalk it back up to youth.
Yeah, well, obviously,
like,
yeah.
If you could... But I mean, with regard to that as well, right? Like, more experienced players are going to have more experience in more spaces. But here, I don't know. I guess I'm suggesting that, like, training and, like, repeated effort, repeated experience for a very young team as this one is going to have a disproportionate effect towards bias for a particular style. You don't have a decade of... travel experience under your belt. What you have now is a season full of playing at Yankee Stadium and fields sized to Yankee Stadium, and then you know, a variety of other fields that you're not training for and not able to train for. So I wonder if it's, you know, a combination of A and B. It's not just like, right, like, I don't think that we can write off that difference. Correlation is certainly not causation, but it is the biggest difference between home and the road. And just because we haven't seen that that difference result in a disparate amount of home field advantage for this side in the past, doesn't mean that that's still not indicative of one here.
Well, but then you fold things in, like, 2021, winning every game on the road in the playoffs, minus one. 2022, winning those playoff games on the road. The thing is that the best players in those situations are no longer on the team. And the massive amounts of turnover that we've seen this team have, even if you replace players with good players, leads to a lack of what you say is experience. Is playing a full season at home, like, you get those routines down. Even if you're home, I'm sure people are also yelling at you for mentioning Yankee Stadium when we played at three different home stadiums this year. At the same time, you still have a sense of routine and practice, and you've done those stadiums multiple times. And when you go on the road, every experience is different. And, like, do you have enough experience to build routines on the road that will lead you to success? And it's clearly, like, the mentality's not there. That's a question I don't have an answer to. And the other question I don't have an answer to from this game is, what the fuck happened to our set piece defense? Like, this is a team that was been extremely successful over the past years, you know, under Rob Vartugian, defending set pieces extremely well. This season they started off abysmal, awful, the worst they've been in the history of the team at set piece defense. Finally, since midseason, the team has been a lot better at defending set pieces. So why has it fallen apart in the last two games, specifically this game? I mean, handing opportunity over opportunity. And if the style's the same, and the only thing that's different is the players, then it's the players. I mean, what are they doing? They're lacking a focus in these key moments and communication to... It's not even the chances that DC United scored. NYCFC's set piece defense looked even more bungled and out of place on the opportunities DC didn't score. And it's like, how do you account for these things? Where is that level of organization and leadership? And it comes down again to experience, you know, understanding the level of focus needed and having, you know, whatever, play after play after play, this level,
having whatever,
have this repetitions, having reps, getting a level of reps in over a full season, it just didn't happen for this team. So, and it started in the off season of this season. So it's, you know, if you have Chanot and Callens there, like for a whole 5 years, and then suddenly you don't. I mean, obviously that's going to mean something, even if the players you replace them with are talented. It's a lack of understanding, like, the flow of an MLS season. I think that's a big part too.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah. It's a bigger country than most of these players are used to playing in, you know, not most, but many of these new players, right? Like the sort of the shadow side of the Man City scouting network is that if you're bringing in that many folks from abroad who haven't played in MLS, like that, this much travel is really pretty astonishing.
Yeah, and who's been one of the best players on this team over the last few weeks? It's Perea. And it's like, that's one thing we screamed about at the beginning of the season. It's like, what you see from teams that win these championships year after year is teams that have experience in MLS, or that have players that have experience in MLS. And like, I know that we've succeeded otherwise previously because of talent, kind of overwhelmed that, and leadership of players like Maxi Morales and Tati and things like that. But like, Chanot's an MLS veteran, and he left, and the players we have on the field are not MLS veterans necessarily. Or if they are, like a Tavon Gray, he's 20 years old or 21 years old. So it's kind of like, you can see the best teams in this league, like a Cincinnati, they can do a three-player substitution in the second half of three decade-long MLS players who just know how to close out a game in this league because they're used to it. And home or away. And like, those are the players that are missing from this team.
Let me ask you something else about the fight, right? Like, to bring it back to a theme that we were talking about earlier. I want to talk about subs. And I want to talk about whether or not we think that, like, aside from the players showing enough fight or enough individuality in this last match, whether we felt like the coaching matched that or tried to exceed it. I thought it was very interesting bringing in Fernandez in the 60th minute, but then following that up by taking Talish Magno out in the 71st. Did you feel like the subs... And I know there's always like, okay, this is not the most important, it's just the most visible element of coaching that you're seeing, right? So it gets overanalyzed.
Yep.
That having been said, it does feel like a pretty... available index of how committed to the win the coach is at any given time. Did you feel any disappointment or like solidarity with Cushing in terms of how he managed the pursuit of a win in this match?
Well, clearly, like, Keaton Parks, like, that's one of your best players. You have to put him on the field, and you have to put him on the field earlier. I think if you want to change the game and the game needed changing, it should have happened sooner. You know, the Pellegrini sub in the Miami game, I don't even know if that's as damning as it comes off of at face value. Oh, you're fighting for the game and you need to win and score goals even if you're up and blah, blah, blah. But, you know, Pellegrini is a plus defensive player for this team. The team's a better defensive team when he's on the field, even though he's a net negative player. But in that situation, I get it. I'm glad he didn't come in this game because, like, it wouldn't have made sense, right? So, like, subs that you don't make are also good choices. But the Julian Fernandez sub, I mean, this is a must-win game. You're down 1-0 at halftime. I think a player like him, like, needs to come in sooner, even though, like, I get it, 60th is a good time for a sub to come in. But, you know, getting scored on immediately after he comes in is a big kill to kind of how DC was going to set up after that goal. You know, it changes the intentionality of that sub. Like, now that sub has to fight through more fucking muck. Talish Magno, I don't know might be a fitness thing, might be a gas thing. I'm not sure. I think there is some overcoaching that's done, but I think overcoaching happens when you have a bunch of good talented players and you've never fully analyzed which ones are better than the others, or you make decisions and you stick to them even and don't allow to bend in certain situations. It's again, I think you can, as you said, you can overanalyze these things. I just think Keaton Parks is just one of the best players on this team, and you have to put him in earlier, if you, especially in a game like this where field tilt was so important, and you want to get the ball in Asante or Julian's feet more often. He's a sub that has to come in. I think, look, you know my opinion with Julian. He should have been in the Miami game. Like I just said, I understand the Pellegrini sub, but at the same time, that Julian Fernandez is too good to not have on the field ever. Like it's just, if you're a developmental team, like if you're a team dedicated to youth, as this seems to be the intention, don't leave your best, most talented young player out of the lineup, even if he hasn't played a lot. And we talked about the, you know, how this team is disparate and doesn't have any consistency, and that's why the consistent starting 11 led to a lot of success. But like, okay, consistently give Julian Fernandez minutes and large chunks of minutes as well. I just think this level of talent is something that supersedes kind of that idea. Like one position player is, you know, rotating into a starting 11 is not going to fuck up the goodwill that your consistent starting 11 over six games has built up. I just think that,
I suppose, but it also does feel like, I mean, and I know that you have a big hard on for Julian Fernandez, so like, and I would never cock block you on this, not to get blue immediately, but that's what we do. But it feels like that's, I mean, like, it's rare that I hear you espouse something that has like as little nuance as like put your best players on the field or your coolest players on the field. And it feels like maybe it's a little bit like a reaction to, well, obviously this wasn't, playing strategy didn't work. We should have played talent. And I suppose that's a fair way to read this match, because this is not a good DC team that we played. So like, for sure, rather than getting tangled up in strategy and then getting that strategy neutralized, maybe we should have just put Fernandez on the field faster.
Yeah, I would think any other quibblings about subs, you know, in any of these games is marginal at best, except for this one exception, I would say. I'm contradicting myself, but only in this one instance where I think, I mean, it's just, that's it.
Because you love him, yeah, and you're in love with him.
No, because I think, I'm sure at some point we'll talk 22 under 22, either in this pod or the next. It doesn't,
most definitely.
Doesn't deserve too much of our time, but I did get a text from an unnamed MLS employee. I will not name them. who is not related to NYCFC in any way. That texted me, I'm just pulling it up. Your boy Fernandez is better than that kid from DC that Doyle sucks off each day. So, I'm not the only one.
I love the phrasing of each day.
I'm not.
Each and every day he rises from his armchair and sucks off that boy from DC.
I like Ted Cudipietro too. I think he's a good kid. I just think, yeah, I would not disagree that Julian Fernandez is better than him and that he deserves a lot of playing time. And I'm pointing that out to say that I'm not on an island here. Like, people from other teams within MLS understand how good this kid is. I just want to share that.
Well, that's a relief. No, points points to you and to them. Is there anything else to cover in this match, Trey? Anybody else's performance that you want to lift up or drag down to hell?
Nope, frankly, never want to talk about this match ever again.
Well, you don't have to, because now we can get into some talking points.
Talking points. Talking points. Talking points. Talking points. Talking points. Talking Points.
Oh, that was the Talking Points theme song, and we do indeed have a small handful of talking points. We have plenty to talk about, but folks, we're going to release a second episode so that we're not rushing ourselves through these end-of-season talking points, because there really is quite a lot to break down. I mean, we can get into the question of what's going to happen to this team, what the off-season might look like, take a sort of retrospective attitude towards how we find ourselves here today, but we don't have to do any of that today. Instead, we can talk about some of the headlines. Get in there early, get in there hot, get in there fast. We can talk about, for instance... Oh, I have so many things to... I have so many options. I'm having a hard time choosing. Ooh, good. I mean, really, I just want to... I want to give my boy, Jack Harrison, and his sainted mother, a little shout-out for his first goal at Everton, my once and future side in the Prem. Jack Harrison opens his account with Everton in a screamer that added one more to the pile. Not a game-making goal, a 3-1 victory over, who was it, Trey, do you remember?
No.
Well, who cares? Who gives a shit? Homegrown, NYCFC homegrown Jack Harrison, hometown hero Jack Harrison, is making waves and is rescuing Everton's dog shit situation. We hope. We'll see. It's very exciting to see.
Well, yeah, that's...
It's nice to have these callbacks.
The only question is, for you, is do you think Jack Harrison is enough to save Everton's season?
Probably not. But it's nice to see him get a little action.
It might...
Right? He's not going to be leading the charge.
It might...
What do you think?
You're right. He's not going to be necessarily their MVP or leading the charge. Hopefully he'll be a regular starter, and obviously in your first start doing something like that after coming off of injury is like a great way to introduce yourself to the faithful of Liverpool. But I would say it might be the difference between, you know, third from bottom and fourth from bottom, which frankly is like what Everton need, is anything that can tip the scale away from relegation. I think they're... it's way, 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 way too early now, but so far, so okay.
Yeah, my feeling is basically that Everton has always needed goal scorers, like really great goal scorers, and their worst seasons have come when they simply do not have somebody who can fill that role. Mm-hmm. And the fact that Jack Harrison has been, and continues to be a goal scorer,
yep,
right? He's got the nose.
Yep.
To me, is like the best indicator that this is a well-made match. He's satisfying something that's missing.
Yep.
All right, the end.
That was... you said easy. We got a lot. We got to go.
Tati Castellanos scored in Italy, also super dope. Let's talk about the U.S. men's team.
Sure.
Trey, we usually save them for the end. Why don't we get into this 3-1 loss to Germany?
Yeah, I watched the game. Or most of it. I turned it off at the end because it was like, what are we doing here? What do you say? You know, we had our A team out there for the most part, and Germany had a mix of their A and B team players, and we were at home clearly. And, you know, the first 40 minutes looked fantastic. Great. Good things for the future of this team. Looked like living up to the talent. Then you make some mistakes in the midfield, and Germany scores two poopers, and like, they're a veteran team again. Youth coming up yet again. They're a veteran team that just knows how to kill a game or kill possession or make the important tackles in the moments that can help dictate momentum. And that's what happened. Was then USA let their mask slip at the end of the first half and the beginning of the second half. That lets Germany get into the game. Once they're in the game, it was pretty much over. I mean, there was nothing individual talent could do. The bigger question, of course, is like, we just signed Greg Berhalter to a new contract, and he is now three wins against top 20 teams in FIFA, and two of those wins have been against Mexico. So... and then you have only two wins against European teams, and that's Northern Ireland and Bosnia. So, and Herzegovina.
Oh, good.
So that is...
that should count as two, right?
Yeah, man, I was mad when Serbia-Montenegro broke up. I was like, Montenegro had like one or two players that really helped that Serbian team, and then they had to try to lift a thing themselves. So...
That's what happens, right? People don't consider what the cost is going to be to the national side when they decide when a secessionist movement gains momentum.
Yeah, so I don't know. We seem to be in the same place we were at the end of the World Cup when it comes to outside of, you know, Gio Reyna's actually playing.
Oh, good, which was a place that we were so happy with.
I was happy. Made it to the knockouts and then played a good team pretty close. Well, I don't know. The real test, this is all bullshit until we play Copa America next year, really.
The question is can it grow? I feel like one of the reasons we were happy is because it was also like, all right, this is a team that can grow or could grow, but like, will it grow under Berhalter?
I think it will. The only question is how much, you know, can they hit their collective ceiling, or are some players going to be doing a lot of the work and some players not growing well in Greg's system? And I feel like it's probably going to be the latter, unfortunately, but I still think they'll look like a better team come next year, but it's, you know, get those 90-minute performances down. You know, when we play shitty teams, stop putting in shitty players. Like, let your best players play the shitty teams and build that confidence and muscle memory of how to win, and then take that. I don't know. That's my, you know, this whole idea of like, oh, we need to rotate and discover new talent and give players minutes. Okay, but we're at a place now where it's like, we know who the 10 best players on this team are. So let's, you know, and obviously windows and scheduling sucked. And that last window we scheduled was awful and stupid against, like, what was it, Oman or whatever? I don't know. So,
right.
You know, it's going to be a total collaboration amongst all levels of the Federation to make this thing work.
It sounds like you have some degree of optimism about it, though.
Yeah, but I always do.
All right, let's find out. Yeah, it's true. How else are you going to survive this nonsense? Let's talk about some other growth hopes, some other playoff hopes. It is, of course, Trey, decision day in the NWSL, as you hinted for us last week. What are you going into this evening's matches looking out for?
The biggest thing for me that is relevant to our tri-state area is the drama. That sucks, frankly. It's not fun drama. It's sad drama. That this week was Ali Krieger's, you know, retirement party. All these players have their retirement parties. I don't know if you saw Megan Rapinoe's. It was amazing. Biggest NWSL crowd ever. And it was just a great... It went exactly how it should have. And now you have Ali Krieger. She gets her own opportunity in the last home game of the season. And obviously it's decision day. You'll know by the time you hear this whether or not they qualified for the playoffs. Regardless, I don't know how much she'll be involved at that time or if they'll play a home game, but she's supposed to get paraded out, and then, you know, former Gotham player, former U.S. women's national team player, current employee of Gotham, if I'm not mistaken, Ashlyn Harris. It was leaked to the press, and it's curious, I don't know who did, leaked to People magazine that they were getting a divorce.
Oh, Jesus.
The timing of it could not have been worse, because obviously, like, this is her time. She should be with her family, celebrating the end of a long, storied career. Defensively, still a fucking wrecking ball and an amazing player, like, just one of those players where the quality has existed since she was like 16 years old and has not left her body. Like, just is able to again and again know how to make a quality challenge and direct a field. And then Ashlyn Harris, like, I was talking to my sister. You want to know, like, my sister is a huge Crashlyn fan and big U.S. women's national team fan, and she has her own sources within U.S. women's national team, shockingly. For someone who...
It's a family affair.
Who, like, never gave a shit about soccer ever, is now, you know, I don't know how, but she also lives in Chicago, which has been the headquarters. And she was telling me, yeah, there's allegations of infidelity that were not on Ali Krieger's part. There was Ashlyn Harris changing her bio from mom and family and all that shit to just like World Cup winner. And it's like, what does that mean? Oof. And turning off her comments on Instagram and blah, blah, blah. And oof. Just like all this drama. And the only thing is that it sucks for Ali Krieger. Like, she's going out and giving interviews and opening the stock exchange, and she gets to, you know, get paraded out for her last game. And it just sucks that this had to kind of be a big shadow for it. I mean, that's the biggest story of decision day for me personally. Everything else is kind of like, you have teams trending up, you have teams trending down. Is that, that's the most fun about decision day, is like, is that going to flip? It's going to be chaotic, and we'll see how it shakes out by the end of today. Or you'll know when you listen that who managed to... I have a feeling that the teams that have looked good and had forward momentum are going to continue doing so. We go from there. I mean, it's just, then we go to the playoffs where it's kind of Portland and San Diego, and we'll see who else can kind of crack those spots. But I think it's Portland's to lose now that Sophie Smith is kind of back in the mix, and they just have a good base level of talent.
Do you think, I mean, Gotham's sitting at a pretty decent spot, but is not guaranteed a playoff position. Do you see, make a prediction that they'll know whether you nailed it or not. Do you see Gotham making it with a win or a tie?
Can you remind me who they're playing today?
Ooh, great question. I had it up a second ago.
I should know, but I don't.
It's Kansas City.
Oh, fuck. Their home is good. Gotham's much better now than they've been in a while, you know, and we've said that this season, and I think they can. It's just Kansas City is just great fucking attacking talent that is undeniable, and will they survive? I don't know. It's going to take a Herculean effort. I wouldn't say they're the favorite in this game, but I think they have the talent to even go deep in the playoffs if they do qualify. So It's been chaotic at NWSL this last month, and that's what makes it all the more exciting. So, let's see. I say yes, they'll win 2-1 maybe and go into the playoffs, and I think have a good chance to ruffle some feathers when they get there.
Damn, I love it. A 2-1 victory.
Spoiler alert, they tied 2-2 and made the playoffs.
Last but not least, Trey. We need to talk, before we talk about the immediate question of Chicago, we need to talk about the 6% chance of NYCFC making it to the playoffs. Do you have in front of you the three events that need to happen?
Do you?
Aside from NYCFC pulling its 3 points? I certainly don't, but I remember that there are three of them. Miami has to win both its matches. And what?
Hold on, I'll get it. Can you vamp?
Yeah, I can. No, I'm not vamping shit. We're gonna take this.
I got it.
I'm just gonna stutter instead.
I got it.
It's Miami. It needs to win both of its matches, but one of those matches against Red Bull.
No.
Or else Red Bull needs to win one of their matches. What is it? What's the other one?
To make the playoffs, NYCFC has to beat Chicago at home.
Yes.
Red Bull needs to lose at Nashville. And Charlotte needs to pick up 2 points or less in the home and away versus Miami. So Miami can tie both matches against Charlotte and we could still be okay on that front. But we're asking for a lot. And it's hard. Yeah, at home we're much better than away. But, you know, we'll talk about Chicago. They're better than D.C., in my opinion. And then you have... Red Bulls at Nashville. Nashville's qualified. Like, Red Bulls need to win that match. Do they have more cohesion than we do and more drive to qualify for the playoffs? And Charlotte's just, I mean, we're talking about Miami is out of the playoffs, and we'll see if Messi even plays in the last two games. And even so, like, we know they're not a great team. You know, they're not a bad team, but they're not a great team, especially without Messi on the field. Like, can they do it twice against a Charlotte team that seems to... I just have a feeling they have their number. That's going to be the hardest. It's 6% for a reason.
Yeah, exactly. And it's not just the quality of the players. It's also the positions that they... Or the quality of the sides. There's also the positions that they find
themselves. And most importantly, if Charlotte wins, on Wednesday. I think they play Wednesday. Then decision day doesn't matter for us.
And wouldn't that be nice to finally have the permission not to give a shit?
Yes, it would. Oh my God.
But let's assume that we do have to give a shit and that things work out in such a way that we still might just make it here. Yeah?
Yeah, why not? That's all we can do.
What does an NYCFC have to do to be able to take 3 points away from a more difficult matchup against Chicago than we just had in DC and squandered?
Well, you talk about quality chances, like it goes both ways in this match. Like, Chicago's a team that has desperately been unable to kind of find those quality chances, and lack of a real nine and real scoring opportunity finding kind of team throughout the whole season until, like, frankly, recently they've been a lot more consistent on that front. And then you have, like, a defense that has Chris Brady and in the sticks, and you have to get bunches of opportunities in succession to try to find an opportunity there. Look, we have had Chicago's number in this league year over year, including this year, frankly, and I think that we can't be a better team than them. It's just that they seem like they had a bad losing streak, but more specifically, that game that they played against Miami, where all the people were fucking pissed, even though Chicago gave them free money, even if Messi didn't play, which he didn't, that they were in front of a packed stadium, their season's on the line, they're playing Inter Miami, and they fucking win 4-1, and no, of course, Shaqiri decides to, like, come out and be the DP player that and earn the salary that he, is being paid in that one match. I mean, he didn't earn it in that one match. I'm saying he played at the level he should be playing every game of the year. And he continued that. And, look, they lost against Charlotte immediately after. I think that was more of a deflation than anything. But they have sneakily found a way to just kind of stay alive and tread water. And we know that they have, like, the individual talent to keep themselves into games. They are just another fucking team like us in the East, in the bottom of the East. It's a fucking slobber knocker shit fest of teams that have individual talent but don't create enough quality chances. But when they do, they can look really good, and they have good players in certain positions, and on and on and on and on. And that's what it's going to be again. Tactically, not really expecting DC to play how they played tactically. And I think that it's a better matchup from that perspective, but I think that they're at least have a higher base level of talent. But if we can just bully the midfield against Chicago, it's the most important to, like, keep Shaqiri far away from our net, because if they were to do what DC United did against us, they would have beaten us 4-0, 5-0, because the closer Shaqiri is to our net, the less running he has to do and the less involved he will be in trying to track back and be a body in the midfield for them. So, like, that level of keeping the tilt and keeping, like, you have to play Keaton Parks in this game. You have to have James Sands have a better game. You have to force the issue and play a high line, and luckily we're going to be at home, and that's what we can do. So I am at least optimistic that we do have a better chance now than against Chicago. It's just that, all that being said, this team does not have the mentality that it wants to make the playoffs, or does not play like it. I'm sorry, I'm accusing them of not caring about making the playoffs. I believe they care deeply. I don't believe they play like they care, and that's an important distinction. And I think it's correct, and that is the thing, where even though we can match up well and it seems like we can beat Chicago even comfortably at home, it doesn't matter, because they have players that can punish us if we take the foot off the gas even for a minute, or if we give up the field for an extended period of time. And that's what I'm worried about.
So let me ask you the question that you refused to answer at the beginning of this conversation, Trey. If you are Nick Cushing, what is it that you're saying in the locker room to try to inspire that last breath of playoff-oriented play?
If we win, if Charlotte doesn't win,
assuming
on Wednesday,
yes,
okay,
that's right.
I would, because that's I think it's two different conversations if that's the case.
Big if.
If we are still in contention come Saturday, it's the thing is like, and this goes for any decision day, that's the most common sense thing ever, is basically you can't control the other results. We're going to be looking at Charlotte. We're going to be looking at Red Bull. You can't control that. All you can control is how you play, and you have to win. So you have to play in a way that you win, because you have to assume that if you lose, you're not in the playoffs. And the Cushing has constantly talked about, oh, all these games are playoff games to us because we need to win every one. Well, you haven't. So this is the time. It's life or death. It's like, understand that some of the people in this locker room are not going to be here next year, and this is their last game. You have the choice to make this a good ending, whether we make the playoffs or not, or a bad one. You have to win. Even if you don't make the playoffs, at least fucking finish where you can pick your head up and be proud of the work you did. That's it.
So ultimately, it's like, don't let yourself down.
Yeah. I think you can tie it into, these players are very focused on their own paths, as any soccer player is, their own paths, their own narratives, their own styles of play, their own personality, their own brand. It's like, notice that losing today will only tank all of that for you, let alone what the fucking team needs. You will look like shit if you lose today. So you need to understand that, and understand that, like, you can't win by yourself. To make yourself look good, the team has to play well. And I think that's been missing, is that this understanding that, like, players think that they can change the game themselves. No, it's a team fucking sport. Like, you're not going to win if you're focused on doing the best things for yourself. I mean, it's hard to motivate a young team. I don't know. What do you say? Fucking pizza party if we win? You have to find unique creative ways to motivate them. And I think, like, understanding that you will look bad, like, this is a team, and you're still a team this day, and you need to play like it on this one day, if any, because, like, even if you get bounced in the playoffs and fucking trounced in round one, you'll look a fuck ton better than if you lose this match. And if you win and don't make the playoffs, you'll look a lot better than if you lose.
Yep. So true. So true. With all of that team spirit behind them and inside of them, Trey, having had the explosion, this explosions in the sky is playing, and they're filing out to take it from West Texas High or fucking whatever. What scoreline do you expect against Chicago?
I think we win 2-0 and we still don't make the playoffs. Sorry, this team put themselves in a bad
position. We don't need to talk about that part. That's not important. We win 2-0. The end. I'll co-sign it. I'll say we. It's a 1-1 draw for me. Honestly, I think
that would be the worst way to end the season.
Sorry. At least we know who we are. You know what I mean? And come out of it with a sense of identity that has then to be overcome. I would like a result that leaves no ambiguity as to whether or not the coach stays in place. And I got no, I'm not going to sit here and be like cushing out, blah, 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 blah. But I'd also not like anything to water down what obviously should be a missive posed to the front office from here on out. Trey, where do you tweet at?
Trey Fillmore, what about you?
At Jake Beckhard, and you can find us both at
Blue Balls Pod.
The link in the bio will take you to the tip jar. It'll also take you to the merch. It's not too late. Represent NYCFC at the various playoff games you'll be going to and watching at home that we will not be playing in. And we will see you. We got a bonus episode coming out for you later this week, so stay tuned for that. We'll see you then. Bye.
Bye.
Peace.